at Comic-Con, I met, there are obviously a bunch of kids dressed up like Mordecai and Rigby and Skips you get a couple Eileens in there, but one guy came up to me and he goes, "Hey, Zingo." And I was like, "Oh my gosh." And he was dressed as Quips and I almost passed out. I was like, "That's how this show is." It's like, it goes so deep that there's some random guy out there who dressed up like Quips. Pretty fantastic.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Regular Show Wiki's 15th anniversary interviews. Today's guest was the head writer for the series, contributing to almost every episode across the show's 8 seasons. He also provided the voice of everybody's favorite character, Quips. Please welcome Matt Price.
Why didn't you start with that? Why didn't you start with Quips? I feel like that's what every Regular Show fan really wants to talk about.
If Quips was in like every episode, then maybe that would be.
Yeah, no, that's fair. That's a good point. That's totally fair. Well, thanks for having me. I'm happy to be here. And I'll say right off the bat, just writing on our show is a collaborative effort. So I was a contributor, I wrote on all those, but I don't want to take credit for writing all of them. I just want to, for the fans out there and for my fellow writers and board artists, like writing is such a collaborative thing on our show.
Well, we'll start from the beginning of kind of your career. What made you specifically want to work as a writer or even as an actor?
Okay, so I grew up in Evanston, Illinois, which is right outside of Chicago. And I grew up, Chicago's a big comedy town. So I grew up seeing a lot of Second City theaters, big theater there, big comedy theater. So I grew up really wanting to do that. Also, my mom is a puppeteer and a storyteller. So I, saw her making people laugh and honestly telling amazing stories. And that's just kind of what I wanted to do, right? So as I got older, I studied improv, and when I went to college, formed an improv troupe, a really poorly named improv troupe, highly improbable. And then I got into doing sketches and just writing, and that's really what got me into it. I moved to New York. I got my first job at MTV, writing on a game show, and then I worked at MTV for a couple of years, and then I sort of pursued writing and acting simultaneously. Moved to LA. Wrote on some Comedy Central shows, acted on some shows. Anyway, I'm probably getting too far ahead, maybe getting too in the weeds, but like that was really the genesis of it, was growing up in this town and honestly just wanting to make people laugh. Like I was seeing it this amazing theater and at the dinner table with my mother. So yeah, that's the genesis of it, I guess.
And one show which I remember surprised me when I was rewatching and you popped up in it was The Office.
Yeah.
You appeared in an episode. How was that? Like working with Steve Carell and all the people around there?
I mean, amazing. I loved it. I mean, that kid, so this is a longer story, but I love the British Office. I'm not just saying that because you're in the UK, but I did love the British Office. And when they started here, there were auditions. They auditioned a ton of people, a ton of character actors. And at the time, I was acting a lot more. I was just, I was really balancing acting and writing, but I was doing a lot of acting. And they brought me in to audition for the part of Dwight. And I actually made it. I auditioned 7 times and I made it to the final round. There were like 4 of us, and they brought in like 4 Dwights and 4 Michaels and 4 Pams and 4 Jims, and we all rotated in and out and improvised with a bunch of people, and it was really amazing. It was a really cool, really cool process. But obviously I didn't get it. Rain got it, and he's incredible, the perfect Dwight. But from that, they just remembered me and they brought me back to do this part. And it was really fun. I mean, Steve Carell, talk about Second City. Like the first time I saw Steve Carell, he was on the main stage at Second City, and he was this legend in Chicago. And so to be there in this, couple scenes with him, it's a super tiny part that I had, not that he has, but that I had. So, but even that was like, I don't know. It was very surreal, but I loved it. It's the exact, I love that style that, I mean, it's written, but it's like very loose and it's pretty, the way they do it's pretty magical, I think.
It's funny to think maybe if things had turned out that way, that you wouldn't have even gone to work on regular show.
I probably wouldn't have. I'd probably be on my yacht right now, just like sailing around the Caribbean. Yeah, it's funny. I mean, my career's been taking a lot of like really fun twists and turns. And, honestly, I got involved in regular show because my acting, I sort of pivoted from acting to really wanted to, my wife and I had a baby and I wanted to be a little bit more settled. And so acting, I mean, writing too, but acting is very unstable. And so I was looking for more secure writing jobs. And so when regular show came up, I mean, regular show is basically like a 9 to 5, which is amazing. It's the most fun 9 to 5 ever, but it's just more stable than say going out for auditions and running around town and, that kind of thing. But yes, but to your point, for sure. If I was Dwight on The Office, I probably wouldn't. I've done regular show, although you never know. Maybe I would have.
So, how did that come about, getting to work on regular show?
So regular show came about. So I was writing on this. So after MTV, I moved to LA with like a couple of comedy partners, and we were performing here a lot. And we developed a couple shows, a couple sitcoms, sold those. And then I was on this track. They didn't go anywhere, as often happens in LA. But I was kind of on this track that I was talking about. Like I was acting, doing stuff like comedy shows, like The Office, right? And then I was writing on some other shows. So I kind of take like a 3 or 4 month gig, writing on like a Comedy Central show, usually like a sketch show or like a late night kind of thing. And then in the meantime, I was also acting. Anyway, I'd written on a few Comedy Central shows. And I wrote on one. I wasn't really having the best time on that one. And I got a call. It was my second to last day. I got a call from my friend David Sachs, big time comedy writer. I met him working on a show called The Root of All Evil with Lewis Black, which is a Comedy Central show. Anyway, he called me up. He goes, "Do you want to meet with these guys? This guy, JG Quintel and Mike Roth, and they're JG wrote this or had this short that the Cartoon Network is making into a show called Regular Show." And I was like, "It's called what? What do you mean?" Like I was like, "What?" And then he sent me the short and it was really cool. It was just 7 minute short basically of them playing rock, paper, scissors. And I'd never seen anything like it, and I'd never written an animation before. And so I meet with them, and I remember going into the Cartoon Network where I'd never been, and Mike Roth, who was the original, I guess, but he was basically JG's, he and JG, he was like JG's number two, I guess. One of the most talented, fascinating people I've ever met. But anyway, Mike just was drawing the whole time. Like he didn't look at me at all in this interview. And JG was very JG, like, upbeat, kind of like, but still, I learned they didn't want to hire a writer. So I was kind of just there because the network wanted me to be there. And I was talking to JG for like 10 minutes and I was sure I just wasn't going to get hired. And then he asked me what my favorite movie was. And I don't have a good answer for that, like, because I love like 50 movies, you know what I mean? But for whatever reason, I was like, Rushmore, because I do love Rushmore. And then he was like, "Oh, no way. Oh, Rushmore. Oh." And I found out later that he loves Wes Anderson. And so we talked about Wes Anderson for like 10 minutes and I left and I got hired, I think the next day for 7 weeks. That's it, which is pretty short. But then I stayed for 7 years. I just stayed like for all the shows you mentioned. I stayed for all of them. And anyway, that's how I got into it. And I'm great. I'm just, I tell people this too, like, you never know what little thing you can say in an interview that can sort of change it all. Oh, because it really changed my life, you know, just bringing up Rushmore. So I guess the key is just keep talking.
And I feel like, I mean, there's so many Wes Anderson kind of references and tributes throughout the show. I mean, the school that Rigby goes to is called West Anderson.
Wes Anderson, yeah.
Obviously, as you've mentioned, Regular Show is a collaborative show. What was the process like writing for a storyboard-driven show?
Yeah, honestly, I'd never done them before. They had to explain it to me. I'd only worked on script-driven shows, and I've only written on those since. I mean, that regular show is the one time in my life where I walked in, and my job wasn't to write a script, you know, it was to come up with ideas, come up with stories, make sure we had the basics of the story down, right? The premise, get that approved, and then write a very, you know, a thorough outline which told the whole story and then gave it to the board artist who would then board it, obviously, and fill it with jokes, etc. And then we'd go back when they'd pitch it back to us, and we would pitch jokes and, you know, make sure everything tracked. But really, the job for us at the sort of beginning of the pipeline is to just generate stories, and every story that was boarded, we created, you know, from, I mean, we didn't work on the power or Rigby's body; those were done. But from basically like just set up the chairs to the finale. It was all just sitting in a room, coming up with stories, playing games, coming up with stories, and then beating out those stories to make sure that when the board artists got it, they would take it and read through the outline, and then divvy up their sections and just board it. But it was a process that I had never seen before, and it's really tricky because the board artists are not there when we're coming up with the story. So, you know, a lot of times when you're writing, you're seeing it from the blank page to you beating the story, breaking the story to, you know, writing the script. So it's been in your head for a while. This one, like, they're just getting like five pieces of paper and being like, wait, what? So there's a Limosaurus and it, like, you know, it's just like they just have to reimagine it, which is sort of the beauty of the show. It's like you have some people imagining it in the beginning, and then the board artists are taking that, and ideally they're elevating it, right? But that's what I mean when it's a collaboration. It's just like none of it gets done without the other. You know, they don't write any of the stories, but we don't write, you know, we're not drawing it, and we're not writing the lion's share of the dialogue. So it's a wild process, but I've come to really appreciate it, especially if you get it's hard. You just have to get the right people. And regular should JG found them, which is wild, but he did.
So, is there anything personal from your own life that you might have put into different episodes?
I'm trying to think, you know, I've talked about this before. There's nothing that really jumps off the top of my head. I feel like, and we've written so many, and I know they're in there. I know there's moments like there's a Halloween episode where Muscle Man's mom plays that prank on them. Like that happened to me exactly. I know that, like, you know, we've had some of the romantic stuff, like we've all contributed like little bits and chunks. It's funny, for like as many ideas as I've had, I like there aren't as many, like it gets so weird that I feel like none of the things happen. A lot of them happen to, like, the germs happen to JG in college. But I'm sure I'll think of some like later on. But like off the top of my head, there's like little bits, but I can't isolate any of those bits at this moment, except that one time, which sounds lame because I worked on it for so long.
I mean, I remember just specifically the Halloween episode you just mentioned. The amount of hype there was, oh my God, we're going to see Muscle Man's mom.
Yeah, I know. It's wild. I mean, there's so much anticipation for some of these reveals. And And yeah, then you get there and some fans like, oh, that's it. And then others are really moved by it. But that's always the pressure, I guess, of working on a show like this. Like we just try and not think about that stuff. We're just like, oh, that'll be cool to finally reveal, Skips's long lost love or, Maylard or, some character we've maybe talked about. But it's fun. The world building on the show is my favorite part. It just goes so deep.
And I think me being from the wiki, there's over 2,000 pages just of all the different episodes and characters and locations.
Yeah, it's crazy because people will come up to me and like bring things up, and I'll be even you just ask me now, like, what did you contribute? And I'm just overwhelmed with all the things that are there that I'm almost frozen. I'm like, I'm trying to remember. It was a long time ago, but there's just so much. And just to think again, I think back, like it all started in this little room, this little writer's room with JG. Oh, it first started with JG, obviously, but then JG and Mike worked on it for a while. And then David and I came along. And then you're adding all, Sean, everybody. You're just like, I don't know, so many people have made those 2,000 pages. It's pretty cool. It's hard to express how grateful I am that I was there in the beginning to see it grow like that. But you have to remember too, like we were Adventure Time, like Cartoon Network was really pushing Adventure Time. And we were kind of like, not an afterthought, but we just weren't on that level. So then to see it grow, and again, like you said, to have thousands of entries on Wiki, the Wiki sites, like, I don't know. I love that stuff.
I always did feel kind of that Adventure Time was getting pushed much more.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
In the UK, we tended to get we always got everything much later on. When the merch started coming out, Adventure Time merch came out first, and then in the UK, we started getting like little sprinkles of regular show merch, like some of the action figures would show up in toy shops. But then even to this day, like now, if you go out in the UK, you won't find anything to do with regular show. If you're lucky, you might find a copy of one of the comics that they did.
Yeah, you know what's funny though? Like, I feel like we thrived as this sort of underdog. I think regular show, I've always thought had like the crew on regular show. And I'm just thinking now of like, board artists but it really everybody, like writers, prop designer like Bob, like character designers. There was like a swagger that I thought came in part, not only because everybody was very talented. But like I do think there's a sense of like we know that we're perceived as sort of like not like the little brother, but like kind of like the cousin, the sort of ignored cousin of Adventure Time. And we don't have like all the prettiest stuff, and we don't get talked about as much or bragged about at dinner as much as they do. So we're gonna have to show people that we're worth that. We're worth being talked about, And I do think there was a little swagger that I definitely appreciated because I mean, I'm a big sports fan, so I like that sort of competitiveness. JG is sneakily competitive. Like if you ever see him, like we had a rap party one season where we went to this bar and just played, there were just ping pong tables. There was a sort of a little ping pong tournament set up, and he was crushing people. I was like, oh my gosh. He wanted to win. And I think that in a large sense, that fuels, that's one of the things that fuels his drive to just make the show as great as it can be. But it's fun. I think that combined again with this swagger, it's like it just made it for me, I'll speak for myself. It was one of the things that made it fun.
Even with it, like you say, kind of being an underdog, it made it that whenever you did find regular show things out in public, like I think everybody can kind of collectively agree that the merchandise wasn't the best.
Yeah, I can agree.
Despite that, it was always great to see in public because it was like, it's regular show right in front of me. And that was always like, so like I had to anytime I saw a regular show merch in public, I was like, right, I'm buying it. I don't care how much money I've got.
Yeah, we work. Cartoon Network is near, or was near. It's gone now, but the old building was near this mall in Burbank, which is where it all took place. It's like 5 blocks from this mall. And in the mall, there's a store. I don't think they have in the UK, but it's called Hot Topic. Do you have those? Probably not. Oh, you do?
That's where.
Oh, is that where that's from?
We don't have them. This is from Hot Topic, but it's from when I was in the US.
Oh, perfect. Okay. So you know what I'm talking about. So at Hot Topic, sometimes we would just walk around the mall, you know, like on a break or something, just to get whatever, some ice cream or something. And every once in a while, I'd pop into Hot Topic and like just look to see if they still had the regular show merch. And you're right. It was cool when you found it. Also, I found on Halloween, that was always fun. Like just when kids were trick-or-treating and like, you know, for every like, I guess what was the Adventure Time? Those ears, the fin hat. Sorry, right, the fin hat. Every like 3 fin hats, you'd see like, you know, like someone walk up in like a Mordecai something or other, you know, and I'd be like, yeah, that's us, you know. But I like that.
In my school, we had World Book Day, where you can go in dressed as different characters from your favorite books, and there were regular show books, but not at this time.
Right.
But I was like, I don't care. I'm going to go dressed as Rigby. And I went dressed as Rigby from the episode Fuzzy Dice, where he's dressed up like a kid. I don't think we've got any pictures of what I looked like back then. But and you mentioned about Hot Topic. I don't know if you guys have Forbidden Planet in the US.
That sounds familiar. I don't know. Maybe they're, I mean, it's not, I don't think it's as big as Hot Topic, if at least around in California.
I'd say it's probably, it's kind of like the UK equivalent of Hot Topic, except it's much more scarce. Like there's only like 20, I think, in the country. But there was a big one, like there's little ones all across the country, but the biggest one was in London. And I remember I went there one day and literally they got like all the regular show merch, and they had like just this big whole aisle just full of like all the regular show, the figures, the plushies that they did. They had a bunch of t-shirts and everything. And that was like, that, I think that was the one time I couldn't buy everything.
Mm-hmm. That's cool. I'm glad somebody's out there pushing it.
Another thing that I've heard writers talk about quite a bit is cold subs.
Yeah. Oh yeah, sure.
For anyone watching or listening, these are basically episodes which never were.
Mm-hmm.
Are there any episodes which you can remember writing as a cold sub?
Sure. I mean, do you know how that did? Has anyone told you how that phrase came to be? Well, there's a story behind it. One of the first writers' meetings we had, we took a break for lunch. Lunch is a big deal if you're a writer, getting the right lunch. And we went to a place called Jersey Mike's. I'm sure there are not Jersey Mike's in London or in England. But Jersey Mike's is a sandwich shop. If you went to Jersey Mike's and you got a hot sandwich, right? You ordered like a hot pastrami or something. The guy would lean back and go, hot sub, like that. And if you ordered just like a cold turkey, cold sandwich, he would just go, cold sub. Like really, really kind of sadly. Anyway, that became a thing on the show that if we thought of an idea and broke the story and made it all the way through the network and they approved it, it would be a hot sub. And if, so you wanted, you know, 40 hot subs basically. But if you wrote it up or it got killed, it was a cold sub. So that's how that started. And yeah, by the end of the 8 seasons, we had like over, I mean, honestly, we must have had like 700 or 800 cold subs, which is crazy because usually when you work on a show, other shows I worked on, you just don't go that far down the line. You think of an idea and, you know, you kind of land on the 12, 13, 20 ideas you're going to do, right? With us, it was just like constantly churning out ideas, and we take one, like, you know, we're pushing it up the mountain, and then, you know, even if it gets to almost the top, like it comes down, that's a cold sub. But yeah, totally. I have, look, I was pushing my thing with JG, which I learned I had to stop doing this, but I would there were certain topics that I would push that he was like, no, dude, we're not doing that. One character I tried writing for and getting that got cold subbed a lot was Don. I was always pushing Don just because I thought he was such a funny character, and I love the dynamic with him and Rigby, and I love their dad, voiced by Eddie Pepitone, who's just a great comedian actor. And basically, you learn as a writer, like you can push things that you love, or you can push things that are good for the show. And the best writers' rooms are pushing things that you love and are good for the show. And that's why I think those are the hot subs. It's not what Matt Price wants. It's what Matt Price wants that's good for regular show. And so a lot of the cold subs are things that either we all just thought were funny on our own, didn't fit the show, or they did fit the show, but we just couldn't figure it out. But yeah, Don was one. Sometimes we would just get like, regular show didn't do a lot of. Like they did some lore episodes, obviously, like Skip Story, and but they didn't do a ton. We didn't do a ton, if you really think about it in totality. Because I think JG really liked keeping things like in the present. So sometimes we pitch those and they, we didn't want to canonize them or whatever. Those would get killed. And then sometimes we were just like, even for us, like too nonsensical. And then they get killed. There was one we were trying to push for a long time about like a hamburger and a dog like meeting, and anyway, that I remember.
I seem to remember in the Art of Regular Show book, I think it was you that mentioned it, that there was a cold sub called Clogbane and the Flying Toilet.
Oh, I don't know if I did I talk about that? I don't know if that was me that mentioned it, but I do know what you're talking about, and I do know that Clogbane is actually another interesting one because, I think we brought up Clogbane a couple times. And again, I think JG correctly was like, yeah, I think we sort of closed the book on Clogbane. Like, I think to JG's credit, he liked doing things that weren't like we'd revisit people sometimes, like Party Pete or whatever. But I think a lot of times with the ancillary characters, we were like, we did it. We're good. I would sometimes sheepishly bring up quips a couple times to try and do that, but everyone hates quips, so that was only like good for two episodes. But yeah, Clark, that does, yeah, we definitely, I know we talked about that, but then we did a flying toilet episode, right? We launched those toilets. I think if I'm remembering correctly, and I could totally be wrong, I think what happened was the episode where we launched toilets, right? You'd probably know this more than me, but there's an episode where we launched toilets into space, right?
Yeah.
So right, so Clogbane and the Flying Toilet, my memory was, and again, I could be misremembering this because we had so many that we killed, but that the fly that this episode picked up from where that left off, and the Flying Toilet hit Clogbane, who was orbiting, right? And it shot him back down to Earth. And so it was like, this freak accident that happened that they caused, and then it shot Clogbane back down for like another fight with Skips, which as I'm saying it we should have done because that's pretty cool.
In my mind, I'm just going to pretend that happened.
Yeah, because it's so funny too, because in my mind I'm like, did that happen? But I do love that idea that that could happen.
So you've just mentioned Quips, who of course you are also the voice of. How did Quips kind of come along as a character?
Quips is actually a funny story because, so we wrote an episode where Mark Hamill, who voices Skips, had a cousin named Tips with a T. And the idea of Tips was that he was always giving people advice and it was like a downer. But it was boarded, fully boarded, but it wasn't funny. It was kind of like, it was just this guy giving, I think it's the same character design too. He was just giving tips. And so we were like, ugh, how are we going to salvage this thing? Because in, it takes so much time to break these stories and then to have them boarded. And I think Mark even voiced the part of tips too. He voiced skips and tips. And it just wasn't working. It was not Mark Hamill's fault, because Mark Hamill's a genius. It just was, we didn't write it very well. And so we were trying to think of how to salvage it. And I think we were just rhyming, like, is it hips? Is someone dancing a lot? Is it, and I think I just pitched, like, is it quips? And then I just started doing the voice of, like, like some guy just being like, oh, I'm doing an interview, but you can't view me, Zingo. I was just doing that. And people were laughing in the room. And then we just were like, all right, well, fine, let's just do it. And then that's just how it happened. So yeah, the rare time when the episode actually got boarded, like, we took it that far. And then it just wasn't working. And so to again, JG's credit, he was like, yeah, I'd rather make it, he's willing to revisit something and redo it in lieu of putting out something he doesn't like. And that's pretty rare. I mean, I've worked on plenty of shows where the showrunner is like, it's fine. We just have to get it done. But he never says it's fine. He's always like, no, let's make this work. So that's how Quips came to be, for better or worse.
And so, how is that then going from? Because obviously, you have worked as an actor before. It wasn't your first gig, but yeah, how is that kind of just transitioning from, well, not transitioning, but going from being a writer to a writer and an occasional voice actor for a regular show?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I love it. I mean, it wasn't like weird in the sense that I had never done it before, because I had. So in that sense, it was really exciting, right? But voice acting is so much different than on-screen acting. It's so much, on-screen acting is technical in a very different way. Like, you have to hit your mark, and you have to be in the right light, and obviously get your lines, etc. But there's still some room for maneuvering. I feel like voice acting is, so the reason, like, Bill and Sam and now JG and Mark, obviously, the reason I'm always so impressed in the booth with them is just because it goes really fast. Like, the records are like 2, 3, 4 hours to get the whole episode in. Sometimes they're doing multiple voices, but it's just like, it's technically really, I think, more challenging. And that's not my skill set. Like, I think it's fine that when I do it, like, I'm not, whatever, I'm fine at it. But, like, it's a little, I think it was harder than I thought it was going to be. And then I'm in there with, like, Sam, who does Muscle Man, Benson, and Pops, and other people. Those are all very different. You got Bill. He's, like, incredible, right? Outside of regular show, in regular show. I mean, anyway, long story short, I it was a little more intimidating than I thought, but it was very fun. I love it. I'm ready for the Quip spinoff, if anyone's listening. I know that's gonna happen. No, but look, it's great. It's really fun. But it was, you're there with these legendary, in my mind, they're legendary. And so it was definitely intimidating.
Well, I think the closest thing we've had to a Quips spin-off is there was a Quips quiz book.
Oh my gosh, I've never seen that. What is that? That's insane.
And it's all written by Quips, like in
What?
character as Quips. It's a Quips-focused thing. I don't know necessarily if you call it a spin-off.
At Comic-Con, I met, there are obviously a bunch of kids dressed up like Mordecai and Rigby and Skips, and you get a couple Eileens in there, but one guy came up to me and he goes, "Hey, Zingo." And I was like, oh my gosh. And he was dressed as Quips, and I almost passed out. I was like, that's how this show is. It's like, it goes so deep that there's some random guy out there who dressed up like Quips. Pretty fantastic.
Obviously, Quips is very, quite literally related to Skips. So, what was it like kind of working opposite Mark Hamill?
I mean, listen, That, sometimes I don't feel like I get very starstruck just living out here, because I've lived out here for like 20 years, and I just feel like, I don't know, you just see celebrities, and like even Steve Carell, like when we were talking about him at the beginning, like I was awed by his talent, but at the end of the day, he's a person, right? But Mark Hamill, I mean, he's Luke Skywalker. So I don't think I don't even know if I could look him in the eye at first. I would go when I started working on regular show, I would go to the record sometimes and just sit in the booth, not in the booth, but like, on the other side of the glass and watch and just kind of be in awe of them. And so I got to know like Bill a little bit and Sam and but Mark was always, to me, he's like, again, just so iconic. So what was it like? I mean, it was for me, like as surreal as regular show is, it was the most surreal thing. It was really cool. Yeah. And he's just, again, he's really, he's become an incredible voice actor, like award-winning voice actor. So, and I had, at the time, I had no idea. But by the time I did Quips, that was a couple of seasons in, right? It's like 3 or 4 seasons in. So he was obviously established as Skips and such a fun character to write for. So it was, I'd known, we'd met a couple of times, so it wasn't that. Like, I wasn't like shocked to see him, but still standing next to him, like with the microphone, that was nuts. I thought it was nuts. And I really don't say that a lot. I don't know when he was cast officially. I don't know if he was cast before I was there, but I remember my reaction being like, wait, Mark Hamill, Mark Hamill? Like, for real? And then going back and seeing, oh, he has this sort of, large catalog of voice work.
Do you have a favorite joke told by Quips?
Gosh, I don't even remember. I don't remember. I mean, I recently watched that YouTube because I have one friend whose son likes Quips a lot, and so sometimes I'll leave him a birthday voicemail. But I honestly don't remember a specific joke that Quips told. I just sometimes someone will be like, hey, can you just say Zingo in my phone so I can use it as my voicemail or something? But I wish I did. Is there a good specific Quips joke?
The one that sticks in my head the most is the why do seagulls swim over the sea? Because if they swim over the bay, they'd be bagels.
Oh, that's a good one. Yeah.
The thing is with Quips, though, is as you've mentioned, everybody hates him.
Yeah, so sad.
But I feel he's somewhat underrated.
Thank you. That's why I'm here. It's a pro-kid campaign.
I feel that Quips is a very sympathetic character. You can see where he's coming from. He doesn't mean to be annoying. He just is.
I mean, I will say you asked earlier, like, what comes from my life, and I think Quips, I'm very aware of the comedian who's trying too hard. Who is not self-aware. That's something that I don't know if that just came out of my head and attributed to Quips, but like that's real. We all know those people who are just trying too hard to be funny, and those characters are not likable. But yeah, but I think Quips, you do see underneath that. I think hopefully you appreciate Quips. He's just trying to connect with people.
There's one thing related to Quips, actually, which I'm gonna have to send you a picture in the chat. I don't know if you will have the answers to this, but I remember when Regular Show ended, you did like an AMA on Reddit
Yeah.
with Calvin Wong. I think that was where Mordecai's wife was named.
Steph, yeah, we called her Steph.
There is a character who appears in the Thanksgiving special with Quips, and it's a child. Do you know who this is supposed to be?
I'm going to assume that's Quips's. Well, let's see. Well, let me think. That was after he hadn't gotten. He hadn't gotten married yet, right?
No, he hadn't.
I'm gonna say that there's another sibling, and that's Quips's niece.
And she's also immortal.
Yeah, she's immortal. That's an amazing shot, by the way. That's incredible. Yeah, I'm gonna say that Quips has a sibling that's also Skips's cousin, right? And that sibling, this is the child of that sibling.
Could that be tips?
Oh, it could be. That could be Tips. That could be Sips. She likes drinking a lot of different juices.
That makes a lot of sense, actually.
Yeah, look at her. She's all excited there, but she's pretty. Yeah, it's interesting. She seems old enough to cut her own food. I feel like Skips is being a little, I don't know, presumptuous. Yeah, I'm going niece though. I'm going that's their sh I guess it would still be Quips Skips niece too. Anyway, I'm going niece.
So, what are some of your favorite memories of working on the show?
Okay, I have a couple. I have a lot, but I'll tell you in no particular order, okay? I remember watching the finale. We were working on Close Enough when the finale aired. And I remember me, JG, Calvin, and Sean Sellis, but we were in JG's office when they premiered the finale. And I remember watching on Twitter at the time the comments coming in as the end of the finale was happening. And it was like all these crying emojis and laughing emojis and just a lot of really sweet comments that were just rapid fire. And it was really surreal being in this small office on JG's couch with these guys who I'd worked with for now, like most of them for like 5, 6, 7 years. And being really proud of the finale, because I was really, really proud of the finale. And just watching it in real time, because you don't get that real time reaction when you work on a TV show, unless you do a live show, obviously, but that's very rare. So working on an animated show, you make it, and then like a year later, or in your case, several years later, it comes out. But that was one of my favorite memories, just sitting around with the guys, because the regular show is also pretty unemotional. It's sort of notoriously unemotional, but I am pretty emotional, and so being there was really, everyone was getting emotional. It was really sweet. So that was one of my favorite memories for sure. I remember, honestly, when we Excellence, like one of my favorite episodes. And one of my favorite memories is Excellence was a cold sub for like a year. The network killed it like twice. They didn't want to do it. And in large part, it was our fault because there was originally a character in Excellence who trained Mordecai to win the omelet, and the trainer was a like a man made of vomit. He was a little vomit man, and it was really disgusting. And they told us we couldn't do it. And then, so then we added a second vomit man because it was like that swagger I was talking about. Anyway, they killed the episode a couple times, but then we finally fixed it and made it great, and it got through, and it became one of my favorite episodes. And I was just really proud. I was really proud of that we sort of came together and made it better. I remember once, this is so random, but I think I was with Drace and maybe John Infantino and Mike Roth and Michelle Cavan, when the ultimatum, when that burger, we went out to lunch at this place called the Oinkster in Eagle Rock, which has great burgers and pastrami. Eagle Rock's like a little neighborhood kind of close to the Cartoon Network. And the Oinkster was serving the ultimatum. And that was pretty amazing. All kinds of things like that, some work related, some like just post show related. And now, honestly, I have such great memories now. Like I spoke at University of Michigan, where I went to school. I spoke about regular show and just my screenwriting life and just my writing life in general and acting life. And there were a lot of people there who loved regular show. I spoke to the screenwriting department, and this woman stood up and talked about how regular show got her through a really tough time in her life and how much it meant to her. And she drew a picture of me And she gave it to me, and I have that picture in my office. Like, I don't know, just things like that mean a lot and make me really just appreciate Regular Show so much and the people that watch it. So anyway, those are a couple off the top of my head. Those are some great, yeah, some memories actually working on the show, but then just other reflections, I guess.
So you said the ultimatum was like an actual thing in a restaurant.
Yeah. Yeah, it was an actual thing in a burger stand. And sometimes you'll see restaurants will do that. They'll have Regular Show items, which is, again, like incredible to me that this stupid thing that we thought of is existing somewhere and people are coming to eat it. Like, I don't take for granted how cool that is and how stupid that is. And I say that with love, that it's the silliest thing we thought of is now being consumed somewhere.
As you've mentioned, you've worked on other shows. How did working on Regular Show differ from your work on those other shows?
I mean, it really just depends on the show, but Regular Show is such a unique experience. As we talked about before, the board-driven aspect of it is unlike anything I've ever done. Even when we were working on Close Enough, I mean, Close Enough, a lot of the same people, but it was a script-driven show. So that's just such a different process. And then I worked on Final Space after that, script-driven, very different. You're in on Regular Show, we were pretty much, we got there, we were in the writer's room for an hour or two, and then we went off and did our work. Final Space, for example, you're in the writer's room all day. Just you get there, put your stuff down, you eat at the table, you're there until it's time to go, right? And that's how it's like with a lot of shows. You're just in the room until you go off and write a script, and then you're gone for like a week or whatever. But if you're in the office, you're in the room. Regular Show is not really like that. Regular Show animation hours in general for at least on Regular Show, I assume Adventure Time, a lot of those kinds of shows are like pretty much like 10 to 6 jobs. Not the case on the show I worked on previously, to Regular Show that I hated. I was there until sometimes 2 in the morning. Regular Show also, JG keeps it, I think everyone's very mellow. No one raises their voice. There's nothing contentious, really. It's like and I'm not just saying that because I'm here. It's the truth. It's like, JG knows what he wants, and I think the people that stay on the show know how to. That's your job, right? I mean, you make the show what his vision is. And other shows, you see more like disconnect, more like people arguing and sort of trying to make the show what they want it to be. And it's not like that, a Regular Show. So that's why it's fun. It's just great. It's just fun. It's more, the machine works better.
The only raised voices are like in the record booth.
Yeah. They're like, Bill's yelling, stop talking. They're saying, oh, loudly, that kind of thing. That's it.
And of course, following on from Regular Show, as you've mentioned, you worked on Close Enough.
Yeah. I helped develop it. So Sean, Calvin, JG, and I helped develop it. And then we all helped, there's a large, group of board artists who worked on the pilot and helped sell it. I mean, I was in the room when they sold it, which was a really cool experience. And then I was there, like the first season took a long time. It was like over a year. And so I was there that whole time. But then no, then I worked on Final Space after that. And then some other stuff, like in development at the Cartoon Network.
Obviously, as you've said, Close Enough was script driven, but was there still kind of a similar feeling of collaboration like there was with Regular Show?
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, the writer's room when it's working well is really collaborative. That's the best part. I mean, like I was saying, so I come from an improv background, and that's what I love most about the writer's room is when you're like in the room together, you're being collaborative, you're yes-anding things, you're building this thing from nothing to making a great story, right? And then when it, on a script-driven show, it's even further than that because you're coming up with a story, breaking it, writing the outline, going off, writing the first draft, bringing the first draft back, going in the room together, punching that up, and so it's really it's very collaborative for sure. When it works, it's very collaborative. I mean, even when it doesn't work, it's collaborative because you still have to collaborate. But yeah, 100%.
So what would you say are like your most favorite episodes from the show?
Man, there's so many. I did like Excellent. Like I said, that's I always go to Excellent. Just again, the way we did it. I think Excellent also, like, the story of it is very tight. And it, to me, it checks all the boxes of a great regular show episode. Like, it starts with something, the pursuit of something really stupid. And then, Mordecai is trying to help his friend, right? He has his back. And then it goes to somewhere really surreal. So there's things that I really, really love about it. I love everything about it, actually. And again, the way we made it, I do love it. Also, I have a hat that says, an excellent hat. I have a trucker hat, which I love. Are you reaching down for one? Do you have it right there? Yes, I have that hat. I have it in my office. I love it so much. Other episodes. I mean, I love Trucker Hall of Fame. There's so many. I'm gonna list some. What I love too is everyone is different. Like, you can ask 10 regular show fans, you'll get 10 different answers. But I love Excellent. I love Trucker Hall of Fame because I love episodes with Muscle Man and his dad. Those are very tender to me. And I love those are also two episodes. Like, Rigby was in a coma and in Trucker Hall of Fame. Like, we got to spread the ashes of his hat. Like, to me, that was amazing. We could do that on the show, right? Also, in that, just another tidbit of that is that originally it was spreading Muscle Man's dad's ashes. And the network was like, you can't do that. And we were like, okay, what if we spread his hat's ashes? And they're like, we love that. And I'm like, okay, well, that's better. That's funnier. So I think regular show did a good job of taking a note and like twisting it and making it funnier, right? So I love that. I did love Guitar of Rock. People don't talk about that one a lot. That's one of my favorites.
That's my favorite from season five.
Yeah, I mean, that one is so that I love that story. And I love, like, you asked what I bring. I think music episodes. I mean, I've never been to the underworld, but I do like push music episodes a lot.
In the UK, we had like one of the funniest censors for that scene where they started to become very somewhat conservative with the word die, and so they changed that to Bruce Rock has just stopped being alive.
Yeah, there was some stuff that happened later. It's funny. It's like, again, I think it's because we were like the, younger cousin. Like, we were kind of ignored largely. And so in seasons one and two, we got away with saying stuff, some things. And then suddenly people were like, oh, wait a minute, the show's more popular. And now we can't. I'm watching you a little bit more. And so stuff like that would happen. Which I understand. It's weird because the show, like, I know the show is technically for kids, but I think because older people are watching it too, there was always a fun balance we had. There's like a little dance we did, and so stuff like that would happen. But again, even like Guitar of Rock, there's a darkness to it. Like, they go to the underworld. Like, death is a character. I just love that we could write stories like that. And it does escalate, like you're saying. So. Those are a couple off the top of my head. I mean, look, I loved, at the risk of now just rambling about more episodes, I loved, like, I always loved Frank, like Margaret's dad. I thought that episode, the chopper, with the man and ball, was really fun. Anyway, I could ramble on more, but those are some off the top of my head.
And then, kind of on the flip side of that, who would you say are your favorite characters to write for?
I mean, I did love, there was something about, I mentioned Trucker Hall of Fame. I loved writing The relationship between Muscle Man and his dad, I really liked. And I liked that Muscle Man. I tended to pitch Muscle Man ideas. I know we only, there's only like so much of Muscle Man leading the show that you can take. Like, I think Muscle Man's a lot like a little spice. Like, you just want a little of him sometimes in an episode. But I did like writing for him because I found him to be, I like characters like he overreacts. In a world of characters that don't react that heavily, like Mordecai's pretty chill. Skips is obviously very chill. Benson overreacts, but it's kind of like one, like anger is his sort of like love language. So I think but those characters I did like writing for a lot, like Muscle Man and Benson, because I like seeing them fly off the handle. I had a girlfriend tell me once in college that she liked making me mad because I was funny when I was mad, which I thought was really mean. I understand what she was saying. And it's funny seeing both of them react. So when you put them in situations when they can get really mad, it was always just fun to write for. So probably those two. Yeah. And Eileen, I think Eileen was a necessary character to get more involved with. And so I did like, aside from Minty being amazing as her voice, like she's such a great character. Like more, again, a more complex character, I think. So I like that too.
So what would you say are your main inspirations as a writer specifically, for the work that you do?
Well, I mean, I like, it's funny, I like all kinds of things inspire me, like new. I tend to be inspired by, I was thinking about this, a couple different things. One, I'm often inspired by music. So that's not comedy, but like obviously, although it can be, but I'm all often inspired by just like a new piece of music, right? But comedically, I mean, I love a real, authentic, singular, great voice. Like when I was a kid, like I loved Steve Martin and Eddie Murphy. Like those were like my favorite, growing up, really inspirational to me. If I see good, like Second City was very inspiring to me. But just like pure original voices. Yeah, for sure. I was thinking today about like the TV shows I watch now, and I'm like, they're all like I Think You Should Leave. Like that's one of my, I Think You Should Leave, the Detroiters. I don't know if you've seen the Detroiters, but it's like these shows, like Tim Robinson's all authenticity, I love, right? And so like, and then I was thinking about like Severance. Like I also love Severance. So those are totally different, and yet the similarities are like they're auteur driven, and it's inspiring to see something like that. There's a show on HBO called Somebody Somewhere, starring Bridget Everett. It's a really tiny show. But again, it's like very specific and there's an authenticity to it. So those things are inspiring. When I see those get made, I'm like, oh, wait, someone had a vision. It's different. It's not like, it's hard to pitch because Hollywood is so like concerned about everybody liking it. But along come these shows that are really beautiful, that are authentic, and that really inspires me. And I think that's what I love about regular show. It's just JG has a really authentic vision that nobody, he couldn't just pitch that in a room. You have to see it and then make those. And so I think when I'm really thinking about it, like I just get inspired by whether it's an authentic musician or an authentic comedian. Those are, or a book, those are things that really inspire me and make me hopeful because I'm like, oh, if that can happen, more authentic things can happen if you just believe in it.
Do you have any advice for people who want to work as either a writer or an actor?
Well, I mean, they're super different disciplines in terms of how you get into them. I guess the commonality would be you have to find your voice. Like it kind of goes back to what I just said. It's like you have to find what your authentic voice is. Don't try and be like someone else's voice. If you like regular show or Wes Anderson or anything I've mentioned, like don't try and be like them, be your own voice. And if you're a writer, you've got to write, you've got to make scripts, you got to write scripts, you've got to get your work out there so people can see it. And if you're an actor, similar, you have to really work at your craft and try and do, I recommend, be in plays. I know that's more old school than just like making a bunch of like TikToks, but like see what makes you you. Because again, at the end of the day, that's how a lot of the people that work on regular, a lot of the board artists started in comics, whether it's like Minty or Calvin or Ryan Pequin or Sam Spina, all these like epically talented people did comics, and that was their voice. And so JG saw their voice and brought them into regular show. And they've all gone on to do great things on their own. And I think it's the same. If you're a writer, you got to do that. If you're writing scripts and get your work out there, and so someone can see it. Because if no one can see it, they can't bring you on to their thing. If you want to even do their thing, I don't know. You may just want to do your own thing, but you can't do your own thing unless you write your own thing. So that's not like the most novel advice, but I do believe in it.
And just before we wrap this up, I'd like to ask, is there anything that you're currently working on or that it might be coming up soon that you'd like to promote?
Well, I did, as you know, work on the new iteration of regular show, JG's new regular show. I did work on that. That'll be coming out next year. I'm sure everyone is familiar with that, that is already watching you and reading your wiki site. So that happened. I did work on Bat Family right before that, which should be coming out this year. Mike Roth, who was a key part of regular show. Early on, he is an EP on Bat Family and Drace too, and a lot of regular show people actually Drace, Sam Spina, Kat Morris. I'm sure I'm forgetting people, but that's I think that's gonna be a pretty cool show too. I worked on that. Yeah, those things.
And where might people be able to find you on social media?
I don't do as much social media. I'm on Instagram as Maddie Prizzle. But I left some of the more evil sites, and I'm now just sort of Maddie Prizzle. I mean, I'm me. I'm a person. But on social media, I'm there. I'm on Blue Sky, if you're on Blue Sky at all. I don't know if Blue Sky is big in the UK, but I'm there too, as I think just me. I don't know, actually. I'm relatively new to that. I'm not great with social media. I'm not going to lie to you.
Right, that's great. Matt, thank you very much for joining us today. It's been a pleasure.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you for doing this and having us, you supporting regular shows, a big deal. So it's great to talk to you and see you in your cool Hot Topic sweatshirt.
And now for Matt Price's wing advice.
I mean, there's some places here that are like Buffalo Wild Wings is like a chain. I'm trying to think the best place I've had wings here. I don't think of LA as like a wings town. Like Chicago's got great wings. I was in Buffalo. That's the birthplace of these wings, right? But good place to get wings in LA. I mean, I usually just get, if I'm at a bar, I'll go, I'll get them there. And Drace and I did go to Buffalo Wild Wings. Drace loves Buffalo Wild Wings, I will say that.
Thank you once again to Matt Price for joining us for this interview. Once again, make sure to watch this space for more news on the upcoming regular show series. A link to Matt's social media will be available in the description. Next time, we'll be speaking with the voice actor of everybody's favorite slacker raccoon, Rigby. It's, of course, William Salyers. Here's a preview.
We had just been airing for a little while, and I went into a Toys R Us here in LA. They don't have those anymore. And I went into a Toys R Us and I saw that plushie, and I pulled the little string and it spoke with my voice, and it was absolutely mind-blowing. and I did not buy that. And that's one of my biggest regrets, is not buying that, and also not buying about 100 of the Pop Funkos, because those are worth a lot of money now.